Alcohol Tipping Point is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. Welcome to the Alcohol Tipping Point podcast. I am your host, Debbie Masoner, and today on the show, we have Peter White, who joins us from Canada and specifically is here to represent part of the Indigenous people of Canada and talk a little bit more about his story with alcohol and addiction, and then just reconnecting with his roots, his tribal roots. So welcome, Peter.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, to maybe do a little bit more of an introduction of yourself, where you're from, and a little bit about like your tribe.
Okay, yeah, my name is my traditional name is Kinshuke Teshmiet, and in Tunaha, translated to English, that means night runner. And Tunaha is known as the Kootenai tribes, the Kootenai in America, and then Kootenais in Canada. I'm regionally from the Tunaka Nation. The Tunaka lands is, I guess it would be southeast British Columbia. It would be west, south, Alberta, down into Montana and Idaho.
Great. Yeah. So close to where we're at here in Idaho.
Yeah.
And
pretty close.
And so tell me, what was your experience like with alcohol?
Oh, I started drinking at a very young age. It's ran in my family for, I know on my dad's side, three generations now, alcoholism, due to residential schools and things like that. My father just passed away recently. I didn't really have much of a bond with him because he still struggled with his addictions even through his 50s. Myself, I started drinking at around 16, and it took over my life pretty quickly. As I became legal enough here in Canada, it's 19, to be able to buy alcohol, I was drinking all weekend, every weekend, up until I was about 24.
Yeah, so it sounds like it was a part of just your family history, and then just starting young, and so you said you drank until you were 24, pretty heavily, and then what was your experience?
Throughout my alcoholism, I was homeless. I moved to the big city at 18, and I was working. But basically all my money at the time at 18 was going to alcohol and partying. And I was just sleeping on friends' couches. I was sleeping on the streets. I had some of my stuff in bags all over the place. And as I kind of got a little more older, I kind of realized I needed a house to live in, to be able to work and to be able to keep partying. So I partied up until I was about 24. I was with a partner at the time who had a little daughter, and she was 3, and she was Indigenous also, and we spent a lot of our times partying, and she was kind of neglecting her daughter and neglecting spending time with her. And I think it was around our 1-year mark, she told me she wanted to stop partying as much, and if I wanted to be with her and her daughter, I needed to do the same thing. And at that point, I remember I was kind of coming in and out of my blackouts, because every time I drank, I blacked out. I just had a vision of my parents, of how they were and how they had to actually adopt me out when I left. I left the hospital because they had their own addictions and they struggled with it. And I just didn't want to be that for that little girl. I didn't want to be that, keep that cycle going that I was born into. So at that point, I kind of realized I needed to make a change in my life.
Yeah, so pretty powerful to see just from the viewpoint of that little girl that was in your life.
Yeah, because I struggled. I couldn't understand when I was a kid why my parents would give me away, and I felt like they didn't love me. And as I got older, I started to realize they struggled with their addiction with alcohol, and that's what prevented them from being a parent towards me.
Yeah, that and so when you were growing up, what was it like to grow up as a First Nations youth?
I dealt with a lot of racism because I grew up in a white family, and they loved me like their own. And my mom was very open to me learning my culture and stuff. But we grew up in a very small town, so we would get questions all the time because I'm darker on how my mom was my mom and how my sisters were my sisters because we weren't the same color of skin. And I dealt with that a lot growing up, and it was a small town. So you grew up with racism. You grew up with like people kind of treating you different and looking at you differently because of what they saw as a stereotypical Indigenous person.
Yeah, so you were adopted when you were a baby, so you didn't grow up in your culture per se.
No, I lived pretty close to my reservation, and I had some ties with other family members there that were, kind of guiding me. But it was at the age of 9 or 10, we actually moved away to another town that was about 10 hours away from my reservation. And at the time, we didn't have technology like this, so I basically just lost all touch with culture and everything.
Yeah, and so then when you were 24 and you were deciding that you were done with alcohol, how did that tie back to reconnecting with your roots and how did that help you overcome your addiction?
When I was about 2 years into my sobriety, and on weekends in the summertime, I needed something to do to keep me sober. So I started to go back to powwows. As a little boy, I started to dance powwows. I've actually been down to Quarter Lane quite a few times when I was younger to dance and around that area. And 2 years into my sobriety, I started going to powwows all over the place. I would even travel just down to Seattle and around that area on weekends just to get a day out and check out the powwow. And I think it was right around my 3 year sobriety, I was diagnosed with a tumor in my right foot that was cancer, and that's kind of when I decided I needed to get back into dancing and my culture and learning things like that.
Wow. Okay, so let me back up. So tell me what a powwow, I've never been to one, so tell me what that experience is like.
Oh, it's pretty powerful. It's a celebration of life. Everyone's welcome to join them. They have some pretty big ones in the Idaho area. I know Clearwater has a pretty big one. Coeur d'Alene has a really, really big one. It's a celebration of life. People come together to celebrate life and to meet new friends and just to be in the moment and experience it. And they run pretty late sometimes, sometimes they run up to like 2 a.m. and they're all weekend. So it's fun. It's just a good way to meet people and to be outdoors and to just enjoy life.
So it's, did you say it's a week-long event typically?
They usually run from Friday night to Sunday evening, just depending.
So that is where you started dancing again, and then you got diagnosed with a tumor in your foot.
Yes.
And what happened with that?
I'm currently 4 years now in remission. I just passed they do 6 month checkups, and now I'm onto my yearly checkups now, and nothing's come from that now, which is kind of nice. I'm just grateful for that. But it, you know, it was my blessing in disguise because it's what made me, it gave me that spark and that push to start getting back into my culture and going to ceremonies and dancing and going to powwows.
Yeah. So just tell me about your dancing and what that experience is like.
So what I danced, it's called the men's traditional dance. It's a war dance and it comes from the Sioux people. And what it entails is a warrior would go out to war or to hunt and they would come back to their communities and they would tell their loved ones what they saw on their journeys. And they would come back to dance in celebration and victory that they survived another battle or hunting for food, and they came back with food to provide for the communities. And it's I don't know, sometimes I just get lost in the moment, and it's very it's powerful. It's really hard to explain when you're dancing, but for me anyways, it just makes me feel really proud and it makes me feel really strong. And I can't really explain it.
Yeah, and connected to your roots and your culture.
Yes, that's another one too. Yeah, I feel really connected.
So what is the experience like for First Nations and alcohol use? You mentioned that it ran in your family. I feel like it's kind of been a stereotype that Indigenous people have higher rates of alcohol use, and maybe not even a stereotype because statistically it is higher in that population. Can you talk to the listeners just about alcohol and Indigenous people and how that has impacted your lives?
It comes back all the way from that disconnect from the residential schools, and that's what we call them in Canada, and they're also called boarding schools, Indian boarding schools down in the States. And typically what they would do from 4 to I believe 16, they would take the children away from their homes and they would force Catholic religion on them. They would cut their hair, they would beat them and all these things. They would molest children if they spoke their languages or they had anything to do with who they were as people. And they were allowed to, some of these schools would allow these kids to go home for a month or two during the summer for a summer break. And slowly they started to realize that there was a disconnect from the parents to the children. There wasn't that true bond. There wasn't that true love between them. Parents didn't know how to love their children. And the children were neglected of being children, basically, in these schools. And when they came home, they wanted to experience that from their own parents. But their parents were just so traumatized from having their children taken away and them not recognizing them and them speaking a different language and some of them not even knowing their own languages anymore, that parents would tend to start to lean towards alcohol to just kind of numb their feelings and their emotions. And as these kids grew up and they got out of school, it's the same thing with them. They would start to turn to alcohol to try to forget the things that they experienced in these schools. And it's been proven that basically the whole monkey see, monkey do thing, that's true. As a kid, if you see your parents drinking and, you know, doing things like that, it just becomes normal for you and it's normalized in your eyes. And then the next generation it happens, and then so on and so on.
And it's kind of shocking to me. This is the first I've really heard about these residential schools. When was the timeline of these? Is it still happening? Like, what is the history of these?
They started early in the early 1800s.
Okay.
And in Canada, I know for the last one, closed in 1996 in Saskatchewan.
Wow.
So they're pretty recent.
And so you mentioned that your birthday is September 30th, and that in Canada is going to be a national holiday. And what was the name of the national holiday?
It's called Reconciliation Day. It's reconciling the bond between Indigenous people and the Canadian government, which we still kind of haven't really seen much of to this day. There's a lot of issues that go on, even on the American side of Indigenous peoples and reservations and things like that. Just lack of funding, lack of money, lack of awareness. Over in Ontario, Canada, they have over 50 reservations that are on boiled water advisory still, or they just can't drink their water. It's non-consumable.
And I think it's kind of a hidden, I mean, it's still going on in America and Canada, like you said, that there's this populations, there's these tribes that are not doing well, but it's not talked about. The awareness isn't there, like you said.
Yeah, and I know in the States, because your laws are different, some bands, some tribes, they have casinos, which help them be able to have that money and the needs to be able to invest in their community, but not all tribes are like that. It's just a select few that are like that. If you look at all the tribes across America, it's probably a pretty low percentage that have casinos on their land.
And how about in Canada?
It's even smaller. I know of like maybe a handful that do. Just because our laws are different here in Canada as well for being able to pass those and get those.
And so you've become really involved in your community now. Besides the powwow, what are some other things you are passionate about with your tribal community?
I'm really passionate about sobriety and trying to normalize sobriety, especially in Indigenous communities. Because I'm currently single, and it's weird because when I try to date people or go on dates and I meet people, that's one of the first things I bring up, and it's not very normal. And if you're sober, you obviously know it's a lot more harder to date. It's not normalized sobriety, because it's alcohol is everywhere. It's so softly marketed that people don't realize that it's not normal, and sobriety should be normal. And it's crazy. When I used to go to parties and stuff like that when I was getting sober, my friends would bug me, like, oh, how come you're not drinking? You know, here, have a drink. And they were just, it wasn't normalized. And that's one thing I'm really passionate about, is trying to bring that back and to decolonizing, because, you know, as Indigenous people, you know, we didn't know what alcohol was. We only knew sobriety for the longest time. And it's only within the last 150 to 200 years, we experienced alcohol.
Yeah, and just the way that you now celebrate is with dance and reconnection and not celebrating with alcohol.
Yes, yeah. One year I actually went skydiving for, I think, about 5 years. That was pretty good. But yeah, I try to celebrate by dancing and things like that. And usually my sobriety date is June 15th. Mm-hmm. So usually I'm getting ready to go out and travel. In the summertime, I usually travel throughout North America all summer just to go to powwows. And that's what I do usually from the middle of June until Labor Day weekend.
Fantastic. So you're normalizing sobriety by speaking about it and being a Native Indigenous person speaking about it, which you don't see a lot of.
No, we don't. You get a little bit of backlash, and it's, you know, people do feed into the stereotypes that we're all alcoholics, but we're not. It's just only recently, within the last, like I said, 150 years, 200 years, we've experienced alcohol, and people tend to forget like who we were before all this. And it starts at a young age, so that's what I'm trying to make it cool. I'm trying to make sobriety seem cool because it is, I'm not trying to make it, I'm trying to make it trendy per
Yeah.
se, as the, because it's hard to meet sober people. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing you're making cool, if you haven't seen Peter's videos, is your dancing, and you'll do it like to modern music.
Yeah, I like to do that. I like to edit some of my, I'll dance to normal, to my powwow music, and then I'll find a song I like, and I try to throw it in there to catch more people's eyes and to bring more awareness and to just to connect with more people.
Yeah, I thought it. What were some of the modern songs you put on there? I was like, "Ooh, this is cool."
There's an artist, his name is Sick Kick, I think, I believe. He just recently became pretty famous over Instagram, doing the reels, doing a 30-second skit on songs, and he'll just remix famous songs, and he'll remix hit songs and trending songs with old songs and things like that. So I liked a lot of his music, so I would try to remix a lot of my music to his songs.
Yeah, super cool and a good way to like just bring it back to people. Well, what would you say are your top tips for anyone who's looking to change their relationship with alcohol?
My number one thing I tell people when they're starting to get sober is they need to find their why. They need to figure out why they want to get sober. And with that, finding that why, writing out 10 things you're going to gain from sobriety. And if you have to take a shot of that and put it on your phone as your screensaver, your background, and to have that letter on you. And when you feel like relapsing, when you feel like giving up, you just pull out that list of those 10 things you're going to gain and just read it out loud to yourself a few times if you have to. And then it actually, I've given that tip to a few people now, and they said it's really helped them come back to their why and why they started the journey in the first place.
I love that. Do you have your 10 things?
I've been sober for so long that I only recently discovered this, like within the last year and a half, 2 years. I do have a list of why, I'm sober, but I'm at that point now where I can't even see myself drinking ever again, just because I'm happy and I'm content
Yeah.
with who I am and life. So, people are like, "Oh, are you ever gonna drink again?" I'm like, "No, I don't need it. I have no desire for it no more. It's basically a foreign thing to me."
Yeah, it's like, why would you?
And yeah, one thing I also tell people is that it's a depressant. It actually makes you more depressed. It's not an antidepressant like they market it to you, and they make you seem like all you're really doing is just numbing that pain for a moment, and you're not really facing it. And that's where you actually get over the pain or whatever you're going through at the time, is facing it and dealing with it.
And what did you do? What were some of the specific things you did to get sober?
The one thing I did is I started going to the gym. I got a personal trainer, and it was kind of cool because he's sober himself too. And that was the one thing we talked about on when we did our sit down and talking and the consolation on what I wanted from fitness. And he said that if you want to get in shape and you want to look your best and feel your best, he's like, you're gonna have to give up alcohol because it's not good for your body. There's a lot of harsh chemicals in it. It just puts your body in a depressed state and a sluggish state. And when you're first getting into the gym, creating that discipline, creating the it makes it harder because you're not feeling 100% to go. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool how this guy is telling me this, and I wanted to get sober. And
Yeah.
that was one thing, was that. And then my why was that little girl and not being the drunken mess like my parents were.
Yeah, those are strong. What did you? Yeah, go ahead.
One other thing I did, because my trigger day, everyone has their trigger moments, was usually Friday night. So Friday night, my partner and I would usually go just to a later movie, like at the movie theaters. So by the time I got out of the movies, I was too tired to want to drink anyways.
That's a good tip because you're in a contained place and you're entertained, and then you can't like get you're not at a bar. And so yeah, and then you can just go home. Those
Yeah,
are
and you're too
great.
tired to to even drink or want to drink. Yeah.
Was there anything else that was helpful for you back then?
I think those, no, that was basically enough for me myself, was just finding the foundation of why I wanted to be sober and kind of starting to work out and feel better. Because I wasn't drinking at all either, so I was more reinstilling that feeling of how sobriety feels good. So that was basically all I needed.
Yeah, and it became more of like a health and wellness conversation than like what you're giving up and depriving yourself of.
Yeah.
I have heard that I've heard the Native American community has come up with a concept of well-briety, and I don't know if that's in Canada as well, but more of the whole self. So being sober and well, your like whole body, your whole person, and they call it well-briety.
I've heard of that. I had a friend recently go through his sobriety. He reached out to me and he told me about that. So
Oh,
that's kind
yeah.
of new to me. And there was a guy before. I don't know where he's. I don't know if he's around anymore. But he was kind of starting a movement that was called Sober is Sexy. And he was an Indigenous too, Native American.
Oh, that's cool. There's been some women out there doing the sober is sexy, but on the Native American side with a guy. That's cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. What are some other ideas or tips you have about you mentioned young people quite a bit, and then being social and dating. Like, what are some tips you have for people out there who are navigating that scene and they're sober while they're doing it?
Just have faith, just trust in the process and understanding that everything happens for the right reasons. And when you have a foundation of what you want and you have a, like per se, a mission, you have that in mind, you're going to get tempted. You're going to get tested by meeting people that you may like that don't have the same similarities as you. They party or they do drugs, and but you kind of have a little connection with them, and that's just more of a test to see if you truly want to be with someone who's sober. And from my past experiences, I've started to realize that it doesn't work at all. Even I've had people kind of lie to me and say, "Oh, I only drink once in a while. I only drink a little bit." And then as I started to get to know them, a little bit was a lot. And our lives just didn't collide the same way. They didn't have the same things we like to do, and the relationships just never worked out.
Yeah. So finding someone who's on the same path as you and being honest.
Yeah, that's all I ask people is just to be honest up front. But that's really hard nowadays for people to be upfront with everything and just be honest, because social media makes it so easy to create a character who on who you're not. And that's also one thing I'm trying to normalize too, is just being you and being vulnerable, or just being who you are truly, because we're all unique in some way. And social media has kind of pushed people to think the opposite of that. They have to be perfect, and they have to be like this, and they have to be like that, and it's not like that.
Yeah, just being your true, authentic self and vulnerable. I mean, which is really hard for people to do, and they can perceive it as being weak, and they don't want to be seen as being weak. And so it takes practice to really put yourself out there.
It does. And that's like sobriety, you know. I tell people, if you can get sober, you can do anything in this world, because sobriety is such a huge thing, right? It's a big accomplishment for a lot of people, because it's so normalized with marketing and how it's in movies and how it's everywhere. Drinking alcohol it's normalized, which it shouldn't be. And if you can get sober and you can do that, you can do anything you set your mind on.
Yeah, it's a real confidence booster. Like, yeah, I got this. And like you, like, to do something that's against the grain, to really put yourself out there and be different than the majority of people is a kind of strength.
It is. We're like the one percenters.
In a good way. Join us.
Yeah. It's good. Sobriety, yeah, it's the best decision I ever made in my life, I have to say.
Me too. It just makes everything better. It's not like everything's awful, but it just makes it better.
Yeah, even food tastes better and things like that. And vacations are better. And you have one thing I tell, because I work in construction, one thing I tell young guys is that your bank account does not deplete at all. Like, you basically, you're not wasting money. You're literally saving it.
Yeah, that's a huge one. Totally. Well, what are your plans for the future, Peter?
I'm recently kind of looking into becoming a holistic nutritionist, and kind of tying that with sobriety and eating and how it makes you feel better, and how even just eating certain things could even help you on your sobriety journey by making you feel better, by just drinking more water throughout the day. That's one good tip that I got from my trainers. My water intake was really bad, and just how it's food can affect your mood, and it can either help make or break your, even your sobriety journey.
Yeah, food is a huge one, and a huge trigger for a lot of people, and for me in particular, was when I was hungry. And so just fueling yourself and taking care of your body and keeping your blood sugar stable just can really help a lot with those cravings.
And yeah, that's my goal, is to become a holistic nutritionist. You know, also just keep spreading the awareness to more people and helping them on their journeys, and, you know, trying to normalize sobriety and make it a cool thing, so young kids don't have to go through what I went through. Especially, you know, in the Indigenous community, it takes away a lot of people's lives. My cousin, at the age of 18, he, on our grad night, he hung himself because he was drunk and depressed over a girl. And it happens far too often, suicides with alcohol.
Yes.
In the younger people. So that's one thing I kind of want to make cool, is being sober and showing you, you know, you don't have to party to have fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, the rate of suicides related to alcohol use and the suicide completions while intoxicated are alarmingly high. That's super important.
Yeah, because my alcoholism, I even attempted a couple times suicide because I was just so depressed, and I didn't realize that. So when I got sober, I realized that it is pretty alarming that I would try to even attempt that. And the only reason why I attempted it was because I was drinking, and I tried to do it. Yeah. When I was under the influence of alcohol.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's something that doesn't get talked about a lot, is the suicidal ideation while you're drunk. I think a lot of people, that is when you get to that certain point, it does become more common, and it's terrifying. And so definitely worth talking about that it's the alcohol that's leading to you feeling that way.
Yeah, it's the depression in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a saying from an elder. He said that, you know, there are spirits, you know, alcohol is a form of medicine, but as in everything, if it gets abused, it can overtake your life, just like drugs. You know, certain drugs, they're like a medicine in a form, but it's really hard to be able to not over abuse them.
Yeah, anything. I mean, really, you can become addicted to anything. I mean, we've become addicted to our phones. Gambling is an addiction. Food. Drugs, smoking, you name it.
Yeah, addiction. We're addicted people. I think it's to do with our subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the subconscious mind wanting to always take the easiest route. And it doesn't matter what it is, whatever that normal is, it just wants to go that easiest pathway. So when you get sober, that's why you have to really instill your why.
Yeah. And that takes practice. That's why I always say, like, I want to help people practice not drinking. It's not automatic. It does take some time to rewire your brain.
Yeah. Because I've attempted to quit drinking before, I think 9 or 10 times before that, before I actually quit. And how I kind of did it, like a soft way. I told myself, okay, you can only drink once a weekend. So I would pick a certain date. And then that kind of became a little bit of a habit. And then I said, okay, well, then I could only drink twice a month. And then it got to the point where I didn't have alcohol for 3 months. And then when I got a case of beer, I had like a 6-pack, and that's when I realized I had a problem, because I started to get that tingly feeling in my stomach that I really enjoyed, and I was always trying to chase that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I actually realized that I had a problem, because I had to fight with everything in me not to go out and drink and black out.
Yeah. And just being aware of that, like, step one is awareness.
I never did the AA thing, so I'm not really familiar with the whole
stuff. Oh, I didn't mean step one AA. I didn't do the AA thing either. That sounded, kudos to people who do AA. I do not. But I should rephrase that. So step one for making any change in your life is awareness. If you're not aware of it, you can't change it.
It's true, yeah. That is true. It's being self-aware, because then you can stop that habit.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up more into your conscious mind.
Yeah. Well, so the future, we're going to look for you as a holistic nutritionist. Where can people find you now?
They can find me on TikTok and Instagram mainly. That's where I do a lot of my contact. And my username is Peter Not So White.
Peter Not So White.
Yeah, because my legal name is White and I'm not really white.
Yeah, how about that? Because that was your adopted name?
No, it was actually my name from my dad, my real father, my blood father. There's a story behind that. I guess it comes from residential schools again.
Mm-hmm.
When they were putting these children into these schools, we went through clan systems, some went through, you know, tribes and different things like that, but we didn't have last names. And, you know, it was a European thing to have a last name. And so what they would do is they would just ask the kids what their father's name meant, you know, in English, and that's what became your last name when you were put into these schools.
Interesting. So it came from your language of white.
Yeah.
And where did your Night Runner name come from?
It came from my Nasukan, and Nasukan means chief, through ceremony, we went and we sat down, and I asked him for a name because I growing up, I never had one, and it kind of just felt like I needed to have a name because it ties you to who you are. And yeah, we went into Sweat Lodge and ceremony, and he had given me that name through that way.
Wow. How does that happen? Tell me about that. That's interesting.
Usually, elders or Nisukans and people that can sense, they've had more experience on this earth than us, so they have more knowledge than us, and they're told these stories throughout their journeys, and they kind of just it comes to them, these names and these feelings, and that's how they just usually that's how they hand out names to people. And he said he had this name. The story that was told about my name for almost 20 years, he said, and it just felt like it was meant for me.
Wow. And how does Night Runner feel to you?
It feels pretty powerful because the story behind it was that there was this messenger. He would bring messages to other communities of things that were going to happen, if a war was going to happen or a storm or things like that. And he would travel at night, and he would basically, it would seem like he would get there in an instant, and it was like his spirit was guiding him there, and his spirit would get him there in an instant. And now I kind of feel like that's who I am. I'm bringing messages to people on how to heal themselves, on how to get sober, on how to just become the best versions of themselves.
Yeah, that is really powerful. And how do you say it in your language?
It's Kanshuke Teshmiet.
Beautiful. Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. It's nice. It's a nice rainy day here in Vancouver on the West Coast, so it's nice just to stay inside and have a good conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again. If you are listening and you want to follow Peter, he's at Peter Not So White on Instagram. And where was the other place? TikTok. And it's the
TikTok, yeah.
same handle. At Peter Not So White, and some really cool videos and message there. All right.
And
Well,
very good, and yeah, very good quotes too. Very good positive quotes to help you get in a good mood every day.
yeah, just I mean, we talk about social media being some of the negative side of social media, but this is definitely a positive side of social media. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Alcohol Tipping Point. I'm always here for you guys, so please feel free to reach out and talk to me on Instagram at Alcohol Tipping Point, and check out my website, alcoholtippingpoint.com. Again, I hope you can use these tips we talked about for the rest of your week. And until then, see you next time.